Okay, so Bruce, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Louisa. I'm Bruce, addict and alcoholic from Woodstock, Georgia, just a suburb of Atlanta. So we're due north of Atlanta, Georgia, if you have any clue where that is. And good to see all of you folks today, familiar and not. yes, tomorrow is 4 years. So 4 years ago today was just a flat out disaster of a drunk. And when I really crashed and burned, and my wife got me into detox and rehab, and that's what saved my life, because I could not stop. I could not stop by myself. and why did I drink? Well, that's sort of been a question because I had a great life growing up, no real problems. My parents were great. Very loving family. The only thing that they didn't do was talk about things that were not pleasant. And everything was sort of under the table. You never talked about a problem. You just sort of swept it away or covered it up. Didn't let anyone in on it. Didn't let anyone help you out with it. You just had to suck it up. So it was loving, but it was well, let's don't talk about that. That's not really comfortable to talk about, so we didn't. And it was it was a nice growing up. We had neighborhood kids we played with, and I was sort of a small, shy kid growing up. Off to high school, first time I ever got drunk, I was 16, and two of my friends and I went to a liquor store and waited for some young guys to pull in, and we got them to buy us a bottle of scotch. Went back to his house and drank scotch and coke. What an awful combination. And we all got pretty drunk, walked home, and that was my first real experience. I was a social drinker through college. I drank to party on weekends. I really didn't drink that much. Pardon me, during the week, an occasional beer. And that's where I learned to like beer. My roommate and I went down. Neither one of us really liked beer when we were freshmen. And we went down and decided, okay, we're going to learn to like beer because that's what everybody drinks. That was not a good thing to do. So started drinking a lot on weekends, drinking to party, managed to get through school. Met my wife in college. We got married when I was 22, and we still are. So that has been the rock of my life, really. Got out of college, moved down here, and we went to college in South Carolina at Clemson, and we came down here to Atlanta and got a teaching job so I could go to grad school. And I ended up loving teaching, so I changed my major, and I taught biology, human anatomy, physiology in high school. I was the boys' soccer coach for quite a while, and that was all great. My ego began to grow. Unfortunately, I became very self-centered. I was a good teacher. I was a good coach. I won awards. Things like this were taking off. I started working out. I got big. All these things just fed to my ego, and I wasn't aware of what an asshole I was becoming. And I retired in 2001, so I've been retired a while. And retirement was going great. We were traveling here and there and everything. The big turning point in my life was when I had knee replacement in 2010 because they put me on hydrocodone. Oh my God, I loved it. I had never felt such a wonderful high. And I remember sitting there on the couch, just watching the clock till I could take my next one. And it just became an obsession. And so, I stayed on that. Even after I got out of that, I would fake how much my knee was bothering me so that I could keep the prescription going. And then I had a second knee done that carried it on. And then Oh, my back. I've got really bad back trouble. I need more, and I need more. And so it snowballed. And so the drug use with the hydrocodone was really my big trigger, because I found that, I would get used to the hydrocodone. It wasn't affecting me like it used to. So, hey, if I have a drink while I take one of these pills, I get that good high back. And so I started mixing alcohol and hydrocodone. What a dumbass thing to do. Talk about dangerous. And this went on for for 8 or 10 years. And the drinking just got worse and worse and worse. And so finally, I was doing stupid things. I would drive high. I would drive drunk with a car full of people. If I had to go anywhere or do anything, I always wanted to have something to drink with me. I would take a water bottle and fill it half full of vodka or more full of vodka and get in a 500 horsepower car and go driving around. How stupid is that? I am out there to kill myself or someone else. I always wanted to have that bottle with me when I'm driving. And that was just asinine. I was not aware of how I was affecting other people. They thought I was beginning to go into dementia or early Alzheimer's. They thought that, well, geez, Bruce is really starting to lose it. And when we were on a trip 4 years ago with some friends, we were down in Grand Cayman, and I could hardly walk. I was borrowing his walking stick to walk around because I had no balance. I would walk down the hall with my hand on the wall so I could stay steady. I fell into the bushes. Ha ha ha. So funny. I was a mess. And so we came home from that trip, and Pam, my wife, she was really worried about, what's wrong with you? What's going on? I lied to her about the pills. I told her I was taking just, oh, I'm taking the minimum that they will give me for the prescription. No, I was taking the maximum. The government had really cracked down on prescriptions of opiates, and I found virtually a pill mill. I could go in to the doctor and just tell her what I needed, and she would write the script. But they did have a limit of how much they could give me, and I was at the limit pretty quickly. So that's why I had to add the alcohol. And so my life revolved around getting high and staying, having enough to drink. When we would travel, geez, the first thing I did was look for the liquor store to make sure I could get enough, and hide it in my suitcase, hide it in anywhere I could. At home, I had bottles all over the house, bottle in the basement, bottle under the bed, up at the lake, bottle in the boat, bottle in the garage, everywhere, so I could always be close. And I knew I had a problem. I knew something was up because it was getting worse, and I could see the effect it was having on me. I was letting myself go. I was gaining a lot of weight, just fat weight, and not good. I was getting sloppy, and I was not taking care of myself the way I should have. So things were not going well for me physically because I was ignoring stuff. And it took, like I said, it took my wife getting me into detox to do it. We were at home. She was having a shower for my niece who was having a baby. And I came down, and I was thinking I was being funny. I was cracking these off the wall, off color jokes to my niece, who really got upset. I didn't know it. I thought I was being ha 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 funny Bruce. And I really made her upset. And I started talking about how fat she was because she was pregnant. Well, that's not a good thing to do. And I later had to make an amends to her because I did not realize what I had done. That night, I was coming up from the basement with my bottle to put back under the bed, and Pam caught me with it. And was pouring it down the sink, and I had a meltdown. I was curled up on the couch, crying, sobbing. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I don't have any more. You've poured it out. What am I going to do? She called 911. The ambulance came. I did what I call my perp walk out the driveway to get in the ambulance because I was drunk. The neighbors are out. Bruce, what's wrong with Bruce? What's going on? You have to explain that. That's not great. So, got into the hospital, sitting there in that room. No booze, no pills. They did put me on something I can't remember to help ease me out of it. I was miserable. I could hardly eat. I had diarrhea. It was just a horrible experience. And then got into a rehab place. And geez, I'm in there with people like me. And looking around at these people, they're all walks of life, just like this meeting, all walks of life, very different from me and very like me. But we all had the same problem. We couldn't quit. And that's why we were there. So sharing our stories and talking, it was sort of like being in a meeting all the time, and had a good counselor, a guy named Eddie. He was a recovered alcoholic and junkie, and he was great. Gave me my first big book, which I read a lot while I was there. Nothing else to read really, and it was good. I read the stories, and a lot of the stories I could relate to, but there was this stumbling block that I kept running into, and that stumbling block was the higher power. Because I've been an atheist since my 20s. I couldn't believe that. I just couldn't go there. I couldn't understand what was going on in the world and how all of this stuff going on in the world could be allowed, and yet this higher power gives a shit that I'm sober. Come on, that just didn't work. So I just couldn't quite fit all that in, but I still knew I was being helped. So I came out of rehab, walked out of that door, and I thought, hey, man, I've got this now. But then reality struck. I'm out in the world. I'm back into the things that I've been exposed to that made me drink in the first place. My wife tells me that she cried every day I was in rehab, every night, because I wasn't there and what I had done and what had happened. And how I had lied and deceived her. I'd almost destroyed the most important thing in my life, and that was my marriage. Before I went into rehab, there was one day where I came in and she was packing a suitcase. Where are you going? She said, I'm leaving. I can't take this. And I cried and begged and pleaded and talked her into staying, but it didn't stop me from drinking. I had no control, no control. But coming out of rehab, while I was there, she had found AA meetings for me to go to. And it was just at the beginning of COVID and things were shutting down, but there was a local meeting and I went there, place called the Howe Place, not too far from where I live now. And I walked in and I looked around at all these people. It was a pretty good crowd. And sat down with a woman who was about my age. And we started to chat just a little bit, and then the meeting started, and people started, they did their readings, the 12 steps, and everything else. And I just thought, well, geez, what is this about? And then the big bear of a guy stood up and asked about any new people. Well, hell, I wasn't going to raise my hand, but some people did, and then the meeting went on, and then. He stood up again and he said, okay, one more time. Is there anyone here for their first time? And I thought, well, hell. So I raised my hand. And this big old guy, he was huge, comes over with his white chip in hand and gives me a white chip and gives me this big bear hug. Oh, Bruce, come on back, man. You got to come back. And I thought, holy shit, this is really cool. I loved it. The feeling that I was being accepted because of a flaw that I had of something I had done and what I had done wrong. And he didn't give a shit. He was just glad I was there. And he genuinely seemed to be that way. So I went back to that meeting a few times, and I enjoyed it. And there were people from everywhere. This guy who was a retired physician became my sponsor, my first sponsor, and that worked okay for a while. And then COVID shut everything down. So Pam had also discovered a lot of Zoom meetings. I didn't know how Zoom worked, but I soon found out. And so I began to go to Zoom meetings, and I picked up a new sponsor in Zoom because my first sponsor, he was a nice guy, but he was a lecturer. He didn't get me to say much. He wanted to talk, and that was fine, but that wasn't doing me what I needed. And so I picked up a new guy in one of the Zoom groups here in Atlanta, and it's a good group in Atlanta, and it's a hybrid group now called Quarantine and Sober. And it's a good bunch, but they began to get too religious for me. And so I started looking around and I discovered the wonder of Zoom that I could go anywhere in the world and find a meeting. I was flabbergasted when I went to the listing online of AA meetings, and it was just astounding. So I began to shop from meeting to meeting, and then some things were good and some were. Some meetings gave me the feeling that if I didn't believe in God, I might as well not come because there was no hope for me to get sober. And so I thought, well, that's not the whole philosophy of AA when you really get down to it. Sure, there's a lot of God in AA, but that wasn't their intent. They weren't out to save the world and to convert the world. So I needed to find something else. And at some point, I found secular AA. And it was because of one of the well, it was my ex-sponsor in the Atlanta group. We were talking, and his wife, who was also in the group, said, "You know, there are some secular meetings." And I, what? I didn't know that. And so she connected me up to a woman in Baltimore who was also an agnostic, and she led me to some of the secular AA meetings. I've totally lost her now. But that was my eye-opening experience to secular AA. And that has been just what made the closure for me. It's what made me come around the bend and realize that, okay, I don't have to believe in something that other people tell me I need to believe in just because that's their philosophy. That's their attitude. So I've discovered now that, and especially Tuscanoosa, the blend of people here and the blend of attitudes and ideas, sure, we're very different, but there are a lot of you that it would be great fun to sit down and have a cup of coffee with, shoot the breeze, go out, do something, go for a hike, who knows what, just sit around and chat, talk. Which is kind of what we do here after the meetings, and it's great. And so this whole idea has been huge to me to be able to do things and see people that I agree with, at least on that, because that's a major thing. It's hard to compromise on religion. I've become a lot more tolerant. I have become a lot more aware of myself. The whole idea has allowed me to open my eyes and look into myself and see that I was not the person that I was thinking I was. I thought I was a good guy. No, I was a selfish jerk. And it's made me change to the point that I feel like I'm a lot better person now than before I even became an alcoholic. I had a lot of things that I was doing that weren't good. They weren't right. They weren't fair. I mean, I was not a cheat. I didn't steal or do, major things like that, but I was deceitful. I hid things. I lied. I would lie just to make myself look better, not for any particular reason. And now, what's the point? What's the point in that? Who cares? So, it's the whole idea of AA, I think, has made a lot of self-improvement to me. And like I said, I became an atheist pretty much in my 20s because I've always been a science person. Biology was my field. And but the idea that this whole universe had one creator just didn't work for me. And there's something, let me pop something up on the screen that really showed it to me. This is an image taken by the Webb telescope. And what they did is they aimed the telescope at a spot of dark sky where they could see nothing. And they did an 11-day exposure, not continually, but over 11 days, they would train the telescope and it would track very precisely on this one little spot in the sky for 11 days. And what they ended up with was this image that is the size of the image that they were looking at was about a tenth of the width of the moon. So we're not talking about very big. When you're looking at the moon from the Earth, take one tenth of that. And that was the size of the sky they were looking at. It was about 1/10 millionth of the width of the 1/30 millionth of the width of the entire sky. And in this sky, these white things you're seeing out here, these aren't stars. These are galaxies. Each galaxy is made of billions of stars. Each star can have its own solar system of planets. Uncountable possibilities for life. How in the hell can one thing have created all this? There's no way. So, this is part of why I can't believe in a single deity. I can't believe there's anything that could have created something like this. You look at this one galaxy right here, the spiral galaxy on edge. Each of the white dots that make up that image are stars. It's just unimaginable how magnificent this is and how huge it is. And how could something have done this? It just couldn't have existed. The complexity we see of life that developed over millions, billions of years, just can't have happened by some creator doing it all. It just, my mind just can't allow that to happen. So I don't believe. I'm not a spiritual person either. I don't believe in the spirits. I don't believe that there's some inner spirit that I have in any way. So I know a lot of people might not believe in a single deity, but are spiritual people. Well, I'm not even that. So I'm just sort of there. And I'm just here. When I go, that's the end of the road. And that's what happens. But what I'm trying to do is now, my biggest issue is regaining the relationship I had with Pam, my wife, restoring the trust that she used to have in me. Another guy that I met in a different AA program, he said that his wife told him it took her over 5 years before she trusted him again. I can understand that. I should expect nothing more because I lied and was deceitful for so long. I was a convincing liar. So that is a big thing with me, is to restore the faith that she had. I've got to make choices that don't just help me, but help other people too. I can't just be all about me. Now, true, my sobriety's got to take a priority. That has to happen because if that doesn't happen, nothing else works. So that has to be there. But I've got to make choices that are good for me and are good for other people, at least neutral for other people, if not helpful. I'm trying to restore my interest in other people to that point where, again, it's not all about me. Another big thing I have to learn that I still work on is to pause before I open my fucking mouth. Pause. That's gotten me into more trouble. Something pops into my head and jumps right out of my mouth, and then I'm in trouble. I've said something you can't put it back in. I can't take it back. So pause. just give it a second and think, do I really need to say this? Or do I need to say it this way? How is it going to be taken once I do? That's been a big thing that I have learned, is to do this. And I have regrets. Sure, I have a lot of regrets. And, you know, people say, well, don't live in the past. Well, true. Regrets are okay as long as I use them as learning experiences. If I look at the things that I regret and say, okay, I don't want to do that again, then that's okay to regret doing it in the first place. But I can't just, oh, go, woe is me, I can't ever get over it. No, I can't live in the past like that. So regrets, yes. Learning from them, I sure hope, I hope so. And it's still a journey. You know, I listened to some of you 20, 30 years sober, and you're still coming to meetings because it's important to you. Well, since I came out of rehab, there has not been a day that I have missed going to a meeting or listening to a podcast. I'm addicted. I've got to do it because it kicks my day in and makes me remember what's going on. When I am somewhere and I'm watching other people drink, sure, I think sometimes, gee, you know, I kind of miss that. But I guess I miss the camaraderie more than anything anymore. But I've learned that I can get that other ways. And I've learned that I don't really miss the alcohol like I used to. It gets better all the time. Sure, I loved good wine and scotch and such. And I kind of miss that. But there's so much else out there that I can do without it. And I've done without it. And I'm never going there again. So I feel like I'm on the way, but I'm not there yet. I may never be there all the way. It'll always be something there. I'm helping a cousin who lives out in Arizona. And day before yesterday, he celebrated 1 year. And we've been talking at least once a week. And it's the longest he's ever gone. And we were talking and he says, you know, I really feel like I'm not going to lose my wife now. And that's really a big thing. I'll see him next weekend after next, in person. And it's just, it feels good to be able to help someone else get through their sobriety. Even though I'm still a rookie, I feel like I can give them a little bit of insight. I can help them a little bit by telling them what happened to me. I'm not just going to go you, which, you know, we all know doesn't work, but I really hope that I'm helping him. And it's a good feeling to talk to other alcoholics who are struggling and just give them a little bit of a listening post, someone to listen to what they're saying. And that's why we're here too. Sharing is important to me. And sharing in a meeting is important to me because if I say it out loud, it's real. And I don't hold it in. And I really thank all of you for being such a huge part of my sobriety. Tusnua has just really done it for me. And I love the way this meeting has grown. I mean, good grief. When we're up over 30 people, and I remember when it was below 15, that's great. And the need is there for secular AA, because there's so many of us that felt like outsiders in traditional AA. But now I feel like I'm home. I'm where I need to be. Thanks so much, folks. Love y'all.